Home plate umpire C.B. Buckner had a really good
Miami's
look at
challenging
it.
The out call at home plate.
But the Marlins are going to challenge that.
They got their heads up their ass.
And it's obviously a crucial play.
7:02 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. I was an incredible hot mic. As someone that works in an industry where hot mics are seemingly looming around every corner, that was a good one. Also, kudos to the guys on the broadcast for just powering through.
Not even acknowledging.
Everyone knows that Halford loves a power through. So that was especially near and dear to my heart. They're like, no, we hear the umpire. We know he's on a hot mic. Let's just continue.
That one was self-inflicted, though. He forgot to turn his own mic off.
So that was in a game between the Marlins and the Angels from a few days ago. The interesting postscript, the hilarious postscript to that one is that Shohei Ohtani pitched 6 innings, struck out 10 guys, and the Angels lost again. It's every time they do something. It's the tungsten arm O'Doyle of the thing. Okay, Adam Burke's going to join us in just a moment here to kick off the 7 o'clock hour. I need to get to some business here. I need to tell you that Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour 2 of the program. Hour 2 is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them. 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net.
To the phone lines we go. Adnan Virk now, NHL Network, MLB Network, here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Adnan, before you say anything, I have to tell you, Jason does not want any spoilers from the Succession finale. He's got a bunch of them stored up. He's avoiding social media. Mm-hmm. Do not say anything.
It's right where I was going to go. So I thank God you said, Mike. I was going to say 3 shows, which I love, all ended in 3 days. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel's final show tipped off Friday, which I'm 10 minutes into. I've got an hour left there, so no spoilers there. And, of course, I watched Succession. I got my kids down to bed around 15 minutes after it started, so a wise move by Jason. I also just put my phone away. I'm turning this off. I don't want any spoilers. And then I watched the episode. I will say nothing further, except when I turn my phone on, somebody ad texted me, so I'm like, hey, you got to be careful with these things. You got to be able to text the guy.
Yeah.
Are you watching, or just did you watch, and then go from there. So thank God that Jason's a smart man. Keep your phone up, stay with social media. And then I watched Barry, Bill Hader's fantastic show on HBO, which is right after Succession. So a momentous weekend of television viewing, prestige view. But don't worry, I will not say a word. We're all good.
I got a friend who's a huge Red Sox fan, and he watches, like, every game he'll just watch, every day he'll watch on the PVR. Like, he rarely watches it live unless they're on the West Coast because he's got to work during the day. So he barely, like, accepts text messages at night. And I kind of want to tell him, like, listen, man, I ain't texting you about the Red Sox. Like, that's the last thing I'm going to be texting you about. I'm going to be texting you about setting up a tea time or something along those lines, but it won't be the Red Sox. Let's continue the baseball conversation a little here. Adnan, the Jays are about a third of the way through their season. It hasn't gone all that well. What are your big picture thoughts on this team?
I think the real issue to me is Alec Manoah, because he's the ace of this team, and he's supposed to be your ace. He's got an ERA around 5. So that's where I start. I go, you're not going to win any ball games if your ace is not your ace. Now, I look at the rest of the rotation, and I see middling results. I see Kikuchi's been better than expected. Barrios had a couple of early starts. He was bad, then he was better. Bassett, same thing, was bombed early, got better. Gossman, at times, has been outstanding, and is probably their ace, but Manoah's struggling with it. He has his tough moments. Bullpen, I think, has improved a little bit. Obviously, Swanson was an important pickup from Josh Hernandez, and he can help bolster with Romano. And then the offensive part of it, like Bo Bichette's leading the league in hits, I think he's tremendous. Chapman had a great first month, but he quieted down significantly. Vlad Jr. is very good, but he's not outstanding the way he was in his MVP season. Alejandro Kirk's having an off year. He's a guy who's expected to be great for them offensively. He's been okay, underwhelming so far. Dalton Varsho, who's their big offseason pickup, I looked at his numbers. He's hitting like .210. Like, he's been terrible offensively, but defensively, which is a big part of his value, he's plus +8 defensive runs saved, which is third among outfielders. Again, some people will roll their eyes at that, but if you want to go right through metrics, defensively he's very good. But the problem is they're in this division where it's loaded. And unless everyone's clicking on all cylinders at the same time, you're going to have some problems. So I think it's really a mishmash of things, but to me it starts with Manoa. You've got to get your ace right, and then from there start to figure out other things. And it's going to be a real uphill battle, guys. I watch a lot of AL East games living here in North Jersey. I see a lot of Yankee games. I watch a lot of these Rays games. Red Sox can slug it with anybody. The Orioles are legit. Like, the Orioles aren't going anywhere. So when I start to do the math on this, one team from the Central, which is a lousy division. Okay, whether it's Cleveland, Minnesota, Chicago, it's immaterial. Who cares? In the West, it's going to be the Astros and the Rangers, I believe. The Rangers are the best offense in baseball. I don't think they're going to slow down. DeGrom's coming back if he stays healthy, which I know is a big if, but they've got Eovaldi, Gray, some other really good pitchers. That means if you're going with the playoff math, there's three teams coming out of the American League East. I think the Rays, we can go ahead and use it with Penn. Don't have to pencil them in. They're Penn. So are the Blue Jays better than the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Orioles? And the question is, right now, I don't think they are. I think maybe they're better than the Red Sox, but the Orioles and the Yankees are better. So the Jays have got to do some major moves here to improve upon the fact that they're just in a tough division. Now, the balance schedule does help them, fellas. In the past, it was 19 games against those teams. The Blue Jays have the fourth worst record of any team in baseball within their own division. So that just tells you right there that they do not match up well with the guys that they need to chase down. But the good news is, rather than 19 games against those teams, there's only 13 games. The bad news is, if it's tight down the stretch, which I expect it to be, I believe six of their final 12 games are against the Yankees, and they got a big series against the Rays in September. So for Toronto, as you said, Jason, they're a third of the way through. Now it's time to start to make up some ground.
When you look at baseball, how much do you think about team culture and that sort of thing? Or do you look at baseball the way a lot of folks that are really into analytics see it, as a collection of individuals, and you look at their individual stats and see what they add up to? Because I feel like a lot of the conversation around the Jays is about their team culture, or whether or not they're a mature enough team to compete for a World Series, whether or not they've got the leadership that you need to compete for a World Series. What do you think about all that?
Well, it does start to get to that point, fellas, where you go, all right, how do we fix this? Because you never see any trades done early in the year. Like, I was talking to my friend Harold Reynolds about that with the Mets and their early struggles. He's got to shake things up. I'm like, but you never see any trades made. Like, there's zero trades made in April and May. Like, if you're going to do anything to fix your team at that point in time, it's generally roster construction. It's generally a guy DFA'd. Someone gets called up from the minors. That's exactly what the Mets did. They called up Mark Vientos, Brett Beatty, Francisco Alvarez, three young Mets to help give their team some juice. Yankees, same thing. Aaron Hicks was DFA'd. He's gone. See ya. That's the first time. You're hitting 181. It's been fun. We still owe you $25 million. So in terms of culture, those are the only things you can do early in the year. Trades, as we all know, trade deadline late July. And you can get that kickstarted around the All-Star break. But managerial changes are always something you can do as well. Now, again, I don't think you do it this early in the year, but when you start to get to June or July, if your team is underachieving, you can do it. And we saw with Philadelphia a year ago just how successful that move was. I like Joe Girardi, worked on the MLB Network, but clearly different voices needed. Our fellow Canadian Rob Thompson comes in there, first Canadian manager ever in the World Series, and all of a sudden the team was completely buoyed by that result. So for Toronto, you say you can't make any trades. Okay, got that. Roster construction, sure, you could bring up a guy or get rid of a guy. Okay, that's fine. But managerial is John Schneider of the problem, and the problem becomes this. I'm not saying he is or he isn't. We just signed a three-year deal. So you're not going to get rid of him that quickly. So I think, if the Jays miss the playoffs, something would happen, and John Schneider might lose his job, and they would just pay him out the last 2 years. Now, Don Mattingly is the bench coach. Schneider grew up a Yankee fan, idolizes Don Mattingly. It is interesting to me. He's looking to his right. There's Don Mattingly, who is a former manager of the year, has had success with the Marlins, et cetera. But I just think at this point in time, with regards to this Blue Jays culture, they got to figure it out internally. And you heard about the players-only meeting they had. Matt Chapman kind of raised an eyebrow, I think, when Shai Davidi asked him about it. He was like, well, how do you guys know about that? I'm like, well, we know everything. I mean, in today's age, nothing will be hidden. But that's how they got to fix it. Players just got to play better, because I don't see a managerial change happening. I don't see any major trades happening, at least imminently.
I know that you touched on this earlier, but I did want to circle back to just what the AL East is doing this year. Is this the biggest story in baseball right now? I know that Memorial Day check where everyone goes back and looks at what's happened over the first 40, 50 games or so. I was reading one on ESPN and everyone had the same answer. The biggest story is that this is a historically good division where the last place team, the Blue Jays, are 20-26. And if the Blue Jays do turn this thing around and rally, it still might not be enough because there's two teams playing 650 or better. So is the AL East the biggest story in baseball right now?
It quite possibly could be. Just how talented they are, Mike. It's pretty crazy. I look at the numbers right now. Tampa Bay has 39 wins, Baltimore 34, the Yankees 32, Boston 28, and the Jays with their 20 as well. Jays basically a half game back of Boston there. But all of those teams would be in first place in the Central, which tells you how lousy that division is. And only twice in the wild card era, which was back in 94, has there been twice an instance where the entire division finished above 500.
Right.
And right now it's a little close. Obviously the Jays and Red Sox, the Jays are only two games above 500. But it just goes to show you how loaded that division is. And it feels like it's been that way forever. Right? Think back in the era. When was the last time the American League East wasn't a great division? It just always is going to be that. Because the Yankees and the Yankees, they're going to spend. The Red Sox are going to spend. And the Rays and Orioles are really smart. They just got great front offices. And they're willing to invest properly. And Tampa's just been a factory. I mean, if you go back to, you know, I think it's 2008 since they made the World Series, they're the winningest organization in baseball. They don't have a World Series to show for it, but that team is always consistently competing. And then there's the Jays who are a mix and match. Like we know, obviously, with Rodgers, they've got potentially deep pockets. They can spend money. Incredible renovations made to the Rogers Center. But, you know, they're not going to spend like the Yankees or the Red Sox. Okay. But we can also use analytics and guys like Shapiro and Atkins, who made their name in Cleveland and, you know, can figure out how to win on a relative budget. But for the Jays, no one's going to be feeling sorry for them. This is what it is. I mean, you just wish you were in the Central because that division is so lousy. But for Toronto, it's always going to be a tough division, and arguably this is as good as it's ever been, considering all those teams are above 500.
We're speaking to Adnan Virk from MLB Network here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We talk about the disappointment for the Jays thus far. This one's for my good buddy who's a huge Padres fan, maybe the only Padres fan in the greater Vancouver area. How disappointing has this Padres season been so far?
So I would go with that as the biggest story in the sport. The Padres is just
sure.
A huge disappointment. And I'm a huge fan of Fernando Tatis, one of my favorite players. I know he obviously took a big black mark there after that PED suspension, but he's just so electrifying and fun to watch. I think he's made an interesting adjustment there, right field. He's had a couple of throws that are like cannons, like outfield assists throwing guys out, and he can still slug at a couple home runs against the Yankees over the weekend. But they're 24-29. Like, that is absolutely abysmal. I believe they're third in payroll. And San Diego, I believe as a market, is 27th in America. Like, it's not a major market, and yet their owner, Mr. Seiler and company, have been spending like they really want to compete with the big boys, and let's go. And the Padres have been pushed around by the Dodgers. It happened in the regular season, then they pull off that upset in the playoffs. And you say, okay, God, here it is. Changing the guard. Bogaerts scoring $80 million. They're going to make some other moves. Here we go. But ultimately, they haven't improved, and there's so many problems with this team. Their pitching is actually pretty good. Let's start positive. Darvish, Snell, and when you look at what those guys can bring to the table, they're pretty good. Walk has been surprisingly good as well. Hader's a good closer. But here's the problem. The problem is all their offense. Runners in scoring position, I believe they're hitting 185, which is the worst in baseball. Like, let that sink in. Under 200. Horrible. Bogaerts, after a great first month, has been terrible in the month of May. So that's a problem. Machado, which they just gave $1 million, wasn't hitting. Then apparently is hurt. And he's been horrible. I mentioned Nando. He was obviously not there right away. He's not hitting for average. His on-base isn't very good. He's hitting like 294 on-base. But his slugging's pretty good. Okay, he's hitting home runs. Soto was an abject failure in the month of April.
Yeah.
Thankfully, he's turned things around in May. But the real problem is this. The other guys give you nothing. They're all defense, no offense. I look at these numbers, and when you look at Nola, Grisham, Cronenworth, like those guys are Ha-Sung Kim, literally all very good defenders, and the Padres' defensive metrics bear that out. But offensively, they are giving you nothing. So if you look at a lineup of nine guys and say four guys are not going to be hitting, and Machado is horrible right now, okay, that's five guys gone. You're expecting to win every night on the backs of Soto and Tatis. That's just not going to happen. And that division is too good, and it's not just the Dodgers. The D-backs are legit. Great trade. I can even mention Dalton Varsho. That trade's worked out wonders for the D-backs. I wouldn't say they fleeced Toronto, but it's just worked out really well for the Jays. Excuse me, for the D-backs, because Gurriel has been excellent, and Moreno's been really good for them. And along with Ketel Marte and Zach Gallen, a perennial Cy Young candidate, D-backs are no slouches. So Dodgers and D-backs, I think, both make the playoffs in that division, and San Diego's in a heap of trouble. Now, go back to my point when Jason was asking about culture here's where I think you can do something. And I really like Bob Melvin, but I think he's in trouble. Yeah. Because you're five games under 500 at Memorial Day. You're expected not only compete for the division, but potentially win it. Can't make any moves here. You just locked up these guys. You just gave 280 to Bogarts. Nando's got 341. Machado's got $300 million. You're not making any trades here. What do? You make a move with the manager. And I was talking to a few people about it. I said, what about Joe Maddon? I said, you know what? That would be perfect. Joe Maddon, the epitome of San Diego cool. These guys are playing way too tight with Bob Melvin. I know he's a three-time manager of the year, great guy, got all that. But he looks way too intense and too wound up. Different voice. Out with Bob, bring in Joe Maddon. He'll bring in his parrots and his penguins and all the goofy stuff he does. Let's loosen it up, boys, in San Diego. Come on. Let's just go out there and play baseball. So I'd be curious what happens there with Bob Melvin. As esteemed a manager as he is, Padres got to do something.
See, that's the team that needs Bruce Boudreaux.
Yeah, that's right. I see the connection. I saw it from a mile away. Hey, Adnan, thanks for doing this, man. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the week. Enjoy the games tonight. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it should be great. Mike, Jason, thank you, guys. I can't believe the Celtics came back, and now they're forcing a game seven. I hope Miami pulls it out just because I have contempt for Boston sports, but congrats to Tatum and company on that ridiculous shot by White. And for the hockey, I'm just glad we're getting a little hockey, man. The Panthers, I'm cheering for them, but it's obviously not fun to see a sweep. So I hope Florida wins the cup, but I like the fact Dallas is at least pushing us to six. So enjoy the games, boys. We'll talk soon.
You too. Thanks, Adnan. That's Adnan Virk from MLB Network and NHL Network here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Okay. We need to do this now. We need to talk about, yes, Andrew and Victoria, the football of the English variety. And it was the final day yesterday of this year's English Premier League campaign. Don't tune out. Wait.
Too late.
Change the station.
Too late.
This isn't a soccer talk. This is something different. Because yesterday, the team that I support, then I knew that they were on life support over the last couple of weeks, was officially relegated. Leeds United was booted out of the Premier League yesterday.
Mm-hmm. They'll go down with Southampton and Leicester City. Leicester City, of course, won the league a few years ago.
7 years ago.
Incredible run, and now they're out of the top flight. Go on.
So this is, you know, we always talk about what it's like to be a sports fan. A lot of your like public identity is tied to being the sad loser Canucks fan.
Thank you.
No problem.
Not just Canucks fan, sad loser fan.
But this is something that if you go through the last couple of years of the sports experience, the fandom part of it, and Bill Simmons was the first that really projected this to the masses, where, you know, you realize that your identity is shared with a lot of different people, and it's because of the experiences.
Yeah.
If you're a Canucks fan, it's 82, 94, 2011. You don't even need to say what happened. Everyone just knows what happened in those years. All those sorts of things, the ties that – so there's certain experiences. But most of it is pretty straightforward. Losing big games, coming up short, right? So we've kind of run the gamut there.
Yeah.
Getting relegated is – I don't want to say everyone should experience it because it's lousy – but it is really unique, and it is a kind of sports fan experience that it's almost bizarre, the feeling.
You know, not to take it away from your pain.
Well, it's not even my pain, go ahead.
But I actually found the most interesting scenarios are the teams that don't get relegated.
Yeah.
For example, Everton, which has been in the top flight of English football for 70 years now and will still be in the top flight of English football next season. Now, they barely stayed alive, Laddie, with this goal. This was the key goal that Everton needed at home at Goodison Park against Bournemouth. This was the moment for Everton.
Just a corner gate into the box. Little fall for Decore. Oh! Decore! What a hit! What a goal! It's the goal! Is that the survival goal? Goodison Park erupts!
So, Goodison Park. Mm-hmm. They sound really happy, right? Like, wow! That must have been a great season for Everton. Well, actually, it was a disastrous season for Everton.
Yep.
They once again fought off relegation, which is good. But this is a club that has spent a lot of money. Not as much as Manchester City, but kind of in the middle there.
They're a big club in England.
They're a big club.
They're
right?
very big. The Goodison Park holds 40,000 people. It's a big club. It's a big ground.
Their
it's
biggest a, rival is Liverpool.
They've been in the Premier League or the top flight for 69 yeah. years. Nice.
So after the match that Everton beat Bournemouth at home, and no disrespect to Bournemouth or the Arizona Coyotes, but it's Bournemouth. Like, you should win that game if you're Everton, considering the amount of money that you spend, considering the stakes that you had for that game, and they barely won it. So you're in that situation as a supporter of Everton. You're like, yay, I'm happy we stayed up. That was a great day at Goodison Park.
We stormed the pitch.
They invaded the pitch. But then afterwards, they were like, this is kind of pathetic. Like, are we really storming the pitch because we finished 17th in the league? Well, yeah, you are. Because 18th means you're relegated. Mm-hmm. I just find it such an interesting dynamic. And when I watch that as a neutral, like, I don't care particularly if Everton stays up or goes down. It will not affect my day-to-day.
No.
There is nothing in North American sports that compares to that.
Nothing like it.
The only thing I can see is, like, the Canucks had a terrible season, but they won the draft lottery.
But that's not on the
field of play. That has nothing to do with games being played.
Yeah,
you're not in an arena or a stadium doing that.
But you also don't really hear NHL executives or anything when they, let's say they win, like when Kyle Davidson, the general manager of Chicago Blackhawks, won the draft lottery. He didn't say, well, we shouldn't be celebrating this because the only way we got here was being a lousy hockey team. Sean Dyche, the manager of Everton, had some really interesting and very poignant words, and he agreed with you that this shouldn't be celebrated. This is the Everton manager after a crucial and kind of historic 1-0 victory that staved off relegation and kept Everton in the top flight. Here's what Sean Dyche had to say after the win.
You know, there's a glory in the end product, but there's no glory in these games. Trust me, these are awful games. You know, and I know the fans will kind of celebrate, but we shouldn't be celebrating this. We're Everton Football Club. That's what I've learned. Now, equally, we're not at the top. There's a lot of work to go to get back up there, but we shouldn't be celebrating too much with this. We've got to expect more from ourselves.
So this is such an interesting dynamic to me. So on the flip side of this now is when you do get relegated. And I, like, again, you could care about European football, you could hate it, whatever. I think the big thing is, as a sports experience, it's something that everyone has gone through in North America with wins and losses. This is so different because I don't know how to explain it other than to say you supported a team or you were part of a team that was so bad, you weren't allowed to play in that league the next season.
When you put it that way.
You were so bad at the sport that they're like, no, 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 you can't come back and do this again. Other teams, we're going to give them a chance because you were so bad.
Well, they'll have big matches. Leeds will have big matches against Coventry next season.
And you get the cold, rainy Tuesday nights at Stoke, so that's fun. But this is, so it's like, I don't even think this, like, you guys play beer league hockey. Is there relegation in beer league hockey? Like, if they're like
self-relegation,
right. You're like, this league different. Is too good for us.
That's different.
Guys, yeah. I haven't touched the puck in three games.
Right. That's different. Or you're like, guys, it's time to relegate ourselves to over 30s. We can't keep doing this anymore over 40s. But it is, it's a very, very, it's caustic and it's cruel. And in a way, it's kind of a shaming at the end of the season. And yeah. I go back and I think about this. And I'm
it
like,
is a shaming.
That's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. Everyone, like, I got texts yesterday from people that are like, man, I feel bad for you. Man, I can't even imagine how that feels. And when you say you can't imagine how it feels, it's because you have to be able to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand that there's the financial implications, sure. But to me, that's boardroom, big picture stuff that if you're just a fan or a supporter or whatever, it matters, but it doesn't. What matters is, like, your team, your club has literally been scarlet lettered.
And the excitement for next season is, meh. Like, and that's your desperation, too. Like, you want to get back up to the top flight, but you don't have Manchester City coming to your ground anymore, or Manchester United. You don't have any of the big clubs coming to your ground. And this is especially true when you're obviously getting relegated from the Premiership as opposed to, you know, going from Division 3 to 4. But it's just, I mean, the word would be lame. Now you're looking at a season where, yeah, it's very important because you got to win these games. You don't want to fall any further. But who knows? Like, honestly, Halford, who knows when Leeds is going to be back in the Premiership?
Well, last time it took,
who knows?
Last time it took 16 years.
16 years,
so,
right?
I mean, it's a very, very bleak and dreary outlook. I mean, I know we're up against it for time, but I was trying to, like, what would even a close comparison be? And the only thing I could really come up with is maybe talk to a guy who gets sent to the American League. And it's just for play-related purposes. Like, they're not trying to paper him down. Or they're not. He's just like, you're not good enough to be here. Now you're going to the A. Maybe that's the similar thing. Because essentially you're being told that you can't play at that level. And I guess that's maybe the only closest thing. But this is, now imagine that individual player and that feeling stretched out over an entire club and an entire fan base. It is really something interesting. I don't recommend going through it. Yesterday stunk. But it is a very interesting, bizarre, unique experience. And I suppose if you're one of those self-loathing people, you could try and go through it.
You all suck. We're going to send all y'all down.
Not
going to work.
But yeah, and yesterday sucked, and all of us got sent down.
Okay. Jesse Granger is going to join us next from The Athletic to talk about the Vegas Golden Knights, who are suddenly under some pressure to win tonight. Game 6 against the Dallas Stars. Now, the Dallas Stars are under pressure, too, because if they lose to Vegas, they're out of the playoffs. But Vegas, like the Miami Heat, is now going, are we blowing this? How close are we to blowing this? Vegas loses tonight in Dallas, then that'll force a Game 7 later this week in Vegas. This Vegas Golden Knights team that looked like it was booked to go to the Stanley Cup Final to play the Florida Panthers is having a bit of trouble getting that fourth and final win over Dallas. We'll talk to Jesse Granger about that coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there, Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We had 24 giveaways. I'm not sure you're beating the Arizona Coyotes in January with 24 giveaways. No disrespect to Arizona, but it's not the right way to play. 24 giveaways.
Some disrespect to Arizona.
Quite a bit, actually.
Almost all of it was disrespect, as far as I can tell. You are listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. That was Bruce Cassidy following the Vegas Golden Knights 4-2 loss to Dallas over the weekend, which extended a series we all thought was done. I did, anyway. I think Jason did, too.
For sure.
The dogs. Did you guys feel that Dallas was there nodding along?
Oh, yeah. It was over.
Good dog.
Especially after Game 3. What a disaster that was for the Stars.
Jesse Granger is going to join us from The Athletic in Las Vegas in just a second here. Before we get to Jesse, I need to tell you that Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today, we are in Hour 2 of the program. Hour 2 is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling. They recycle. You get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. To the phone lines we go. Jesse Granger from The Athletic here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Jesse. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Well, we're good. Thanks for taking the time to do this. We appreciate it. Hey, I'll ask you what we were just talking about. When Vegas went up 3-0 after that disaster game in Dallas where Jamie Benn got booted and they were throwing stuff on the ice and Dallas couldn't buy a goal, did you also think that the Stars were toast?
The way they handled that game, maybe a little bit, but I think I was a little more on the side of this series is much closer than the series score suggests, just because, I mean, it was all the games were going to overtime. A bounce here or there, Dallas could have come back to Dallas up 2-0. Instead, they came back to Dallas down 2-0. Yes, I guess the way the Stars acted in that game and the way Jamie Benn acted and all that, I guess I could have, in the moment probably said this team looks like they're done. But, the games were close up until that one.
What about the vibes as we get a vibe check from the Vegas side of things right now? You know, we're watching this go on in the NBA Eastern Conference Final where there's been this huge rally from 3-0 down to force a Game 7. It's not quite there yet in the NHL's Western Conference Final, but it's getting a lot closer. where's the nerve level? Where's the anxiety level among Vegas, its fan base, media, players, et cetera? How worried should the Golden Knights be?
I mean, the fans are very worried, which you'd expect. The players, if they're worried, they're hiding it well. I will say that. Like Mark Stone, after the second loss, very disappointed in their effort, but at the same time, seems pretty confident that, I mean, they basically, it's like we gave ourselves a chance to need three games to win one, and we still have two more chances to do that. So I think the players have used their experience. I mean, they've got a lot of guys that have been in these situations a lot. Like, you look at all the guys on this team that have won Stanley Cups, Alex Pietrangelo, Alec Martinez, Ivan Barbashev, Chandler Stephenson, even Jonathan Quick, who's obviously not playing. They've got a lot of experience on this team that have been in these situations before. Alec Martinez specifically has been up 3-0 and had to go to a sixth game in the Stanley Cup Finals against the New Jersey Devils back when he was with the Kings, and they got it done. I think they've leaned on that a lot. So I think for now, this team, their psyche, their vibes are good. They're fine. If it goes to a game seven, I think that's where things get sketchy. Pete DeBoer's undefeated in game sevens. I don't think any coach in NHL history has ever won more game sevens without losing one. So, and these players are very aware of that because he just won the last few with them. So, it should be interesting if they don't get the win tonight. I think maybe they might start getting a little more nervous.
So this is totally unfair to Aiden Hill, who has a save percentage in the playoffs of .932, which is really, really good. But that goal he allowed, the winning goal he allowed, although it was deflected by a little bit by Pietrangelo off the stick of Dellandrea, like, I just wonder how much, in terms of the fan base or even the team, people are like, oh, is Aiden Hill about to turn into a pumpkin?
I don't think so. And I mean, I'm a goalie, so I'm going to defend the goalie, especially with the deflection. I think if that had been a clean shot, I'm a little harsher on him for that. I agree it's from the short side. It's from a bad angle. There shouldn't be a lot of net for the puck to find from that area. But he's also reading the release on the stick, and Pietrangelo gets his stick on it and it changes the direction of the shot. So I'm a little more lenient on the goalie on that situation. I usually am. And he, like you said, he's been so good. And to be honest, that was his best game he's played in these playoffs up until that point. His save percentage had been sky high, but the Golden Knights hadn't asked a lot from him up until these last two games. And they were protecting him back there really well. He was making the saves he should. Since Dallas has gotten its game going, Aiden Hill has shown that he can make saves even when you aren't playing well in front of him. And he made some spectacular ones. I mean, the glove save on Hintz in the beginning of the game, and then he made a diving glove save to start the third period. He was really good. So I don't think there's much wavering of confidence in Aiden based on that one shot that got tipped in front of him. That was his best game of the playoffs so far. So they believe in him.
Were all the giveaways self-inflicted mistakes by Vegas, or is Dallas doing something that Vegas is having trouble with?
No, it's definitely Dallas forcing it on him. Talking to Bruce Cassidy after game four, Dallas's first win of the series, he mentioned that one of the adjustments he noticed from the Stars is that they were forechecking a lot more aggressively, and they'd kind of changed the way they were pressuring on the forecheck, and they were trying to outnumber the Golden Knights on the strong side. And the Golden Knights like to break the puck out of the strong side. They don't typically like to flip it around and rim it around the boards and go the other way with it. So Dallas is trying to cut that off, and they're sending three guys along the wall, and it was really working in game four. In game five, it worked again. The Golden Knights are going to have to break the puck out in a different way than they've been doing in these two games. And can they? I think they can. They've got veteran defensemen back there. I think the blame equally lies on the defensemen for making poor decisions and sometimes not even poor decisions, just poor execution, not executing the pass they're trying to make. And I think it also, the blame also falls on the forwards for not giving them good options, not coming back to give them good options, and not winning their battles along the wall. Like, sometimes you're going to have to just chip it up the wall, and your winger has got to win that battle and get the puck out of the blue, out of your blue line. So that hasn't happened the last couple games. Dallas has spent a ton of time in the offensive zone, and Dallas's offense, they like to just throw pucks from the point, get tips, get deflections, get rebounds. The more time you let them spend in the offensive zone, that's how they're going to score. They're not a super efficient offensive team to me. They need a lot of volume of shot attempts to get goals. And if you let them spend the whole game in the offensive zone, they're going to get them. So I think if Vegas can find a way to break the puck out better, give them less offensive zone time, you'll kind of see what happened in the first three games, which is Dallas struggling to put goals up.
Hey, Jesse, how much does home ice advantage matter in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Apparently not at all for the Golden Knights.
or a lot of teams, frankly.
The Golden Knights have been better on the road all season long. Their home record was worse than their road record in the regular season. They've played better on the road. I honestly haven't looked at the home and road records. I mean, they've won a lot of games in the playoffs, so their home record's probably fine. But just from an eye test, this team gets up for road games better than it gets up for home games. They've done it all year. So I expect them to come out tonight and play really well in a hostile environment here in Dallas. So I don't know what it is about this team. We've been asking the players and the coach all season long. The one explanation that Cassidy has given that makes a little bit of sense is this team's deep, and they roll four lines, and they roll their three defensive pairs. And on the road, when you don't have control of the matchups and last change, sometimes you don't really worry about it much, and you just kind of roll them, and it gets the players into a rhythm. And maybe that's why they've played a little bit better on the road, is they get into a better rhythm. They all feel engaged in the game, and the depth has really been the strength of this team all year. So that could be a little bit of it, but I don't have a great explanation for why they're better on the road, but they definitely are.
So one final question, Jesse, how important is it for Vegas to finish off the series tonight, considering that the Florida Panthers have been sitting around resting and getting healthy? And if Vegas doesn't win tonight, even if they win on Wednesday, they got to start the Stanley Cup final on Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I guarantee the Panthers aren't thrilled that they're sitting out this long. I mean, you'd like some rest. If this game goes to game seven, well, I guess it's going to wait till Saturday anyways. The Panthers, that's a long time without playing hockey, and I think it could work against them, especially a team that's playing as well as Florida has. They're feeling great about their game right now. The vibes are great in South Florida. I can't imagine that they are enjoying waiting this long before the next game. It could help whoever wins this series, whether it's Vegas or Dallas. If it goes to a game seven, you are very much in the do-or-die mode and playing intense hockey, whereas Florida rolls off four straight wins, has a week or so off without playing. I think it could work in the – now, if you get injured, that's always the caveat. Is if right. There are injuries, then that's where it hurts you. I'm not so worried about the team being tired. It's more so if you have to go seven games, are you missing a couple guys that maybe you would have had if you didn't? As long as you get out of there with no injuries, I don't think it hurts the team that wins this series too much.
Is Vegas pretty healthy right now? I always worry, like, any rest you can give to a guy like Mark Stone, you want to give it to him.
Right. You're right. They are very healthy. The goalie situation, obviously, with Logan Thompson and Laurent Bressois both out, other than them, this team is pretty much full strength right now. I know they've got a couple guys that have been playing through injuries, but they haven't missed time. Like Brett Howden is one. Braden McNabb is another. Other than that, this team is about as healthy as they've ever been.
Jesse, big game ahead. We'll let you go get prepped for it. Thanks a lot for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight, whatever is left in these playoffs. Let's do this again soon.
Cool. Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. That's Jesse Granger from The Athletic in Vegas here on the Halford & Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. I do want to play some audio that we had. This is the Vanni Sartini audio from the weekend. And again, soccer is just a vehicle for other conversations we want to have as I try and make sure that people
Yeah, I love how you're just
again.
Trying to sell it.
It's a lot of soccer talk.
Halford's terrified to talk
it's
soccer.
It's a lot of soccer talk, I'm not going to lie. Okay, with the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs on.
I was cutting clips today. I was like,
I know
what wow, soccer when even you're today. Saying.
Oh, what, we got it. We got to talk about what Vanny said.
Okay,
it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So they the Whitecaps go to St. Louis on the weekend. They lose 3-1. And there were a lot of storylines from this. But Vanny managed to push them all into the background by not just lambasting isn't even a strong enough word. Roasting isn't even a strong enough word. Skewering isn't even a strong enough word. Here's what Vanni Sartini had to say about the referee in their match, a 3-1 loss to St. Louis on the weekend. Take it away, laddie.
That it's hard to win when the other team has 12 men. So that's the initial thought. And if we don't receive a letter from the league that apologize for the shameful performance of the referee, it's something that the league can do it and should do it, because it's for the good of the league, because we export this product away. And when there's something that is completely shameful, unfortunately shameful, because it looked like the referee was a player for them, it's really hard to comment the game with, I would say, trying to get into the thing that happened on the field.
You have some strong opinions there. Why do you feel that it was shameful? Why do you feel that he was kind of playing for
every we didn't have any foul. Every foul for them was there. Every half and half, it was always two different measurement, never the same. And Jake should have been sent off. The free kick, it's our fault. Thomas made a mistake, but it's not a free kick. At the end, it's a free kick for us. They whistle a free kick for them, and they scored the third goal. And the management of the game was on one way. Probably he had a bad day, and I'm sorry for him. But if the league doesn't recognize that, there's a problem.
It was crazy. Crazy where he went with that.
I didn't even understand half of it. I think he was being sarcastic and a little, but
in some parts, yes, but
he was
other
getting a little flustered.
They were, I mean, I watched the match and they were livid with the referee. And it's crazy because the referee is actually one of the most decorated ones that MLS has. He actually came over from Europe.
Right.
And he had been like a UEFA and FIFA graded and licensed referee. So I don't.
Was he like players that came over from Europe? Like he was kind of at the end of his career.
No, I mean, he's 45, so
I'm joking.
No, I know, but that's what
it's
I'm saying.
Referee.
Like, no, I know, but some referees probably do. Like, I'll just go do MLS games for the rest of my life.
And nobody cares.
Yeah, except for Vanny, apparently. Anyway, I don't even want to get into the goaltending thing, because I want to try and get to the thing that drove Bruff and I the most insane, was that this was another game where the Whitecaps went on the road to a relatively young franchise and played in a soccer-specific stadium that looked awesome. Like, just
incredible.
I'm so jealous.
Incredible atmosphere.
This one is called City Park in St. Louis. It's the stands feel like they're on the sidelines. Like, it feels like you're just right on top of the action.
It's a real soccer stadium.
22,000-seat stadium, grass pitch, open dome. Like, it's an open concept. It is so nice. And I talked to a couple of people that
I'm getting triggered.
It looks like a smaller European soccer club.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So right now,
triggered. Remember when the BC Place got renovated? And I was like, it's the biggest open air indoor stadium. Like, yeah, it's too big.
Multi-use.
It's too big.
Facility.
Stop bragging about how big it is.
Bigger is not better. I've been told that. Bigger is not better.
Yes, you've been told that many times.
Many times.
Numerous occasions.
This is the latest in a trend that we've seen throughout the American teams. They open up their own unique soccer-specific stadium, 25 to 30,000 seats, and they look and feel amazing. I mean, there's City Park in St. Louis. There's Geodis Park in Nashville. There's Q2 Stadium in Austin. They've all opened up within the last 2 years, and they're all perfect. Perfect. They're exactly what the organization needs, because it's their park, it's their field. They don't source out employees and food buying processes to third-party vendors. It is perfect.
I want to say something first, okay, that because we're critical of all the sports teams in this market, but I think a lot of the criticism is warranted. I want the Whitecaps to be successful, just like I want the Canucks to be successful and I want the Lions to be successful. That being said, when it comes to the Whitecaps, do you know how we're always trying to figure out young people talk?
The youths,
and we've talked about sus.
No cap,
and,
bro.
And no cap and all that. Are the Whitecaps – the definition of mid.
I'm going to Urban Dictionary.
So you've never heard that before? You've never heard?
I thought you were
going
to say cringe.
They are mid.
They are mid.
They are mid.
They are mid.
Like, mid is...
And I am there
middle
all
of the
time.
Pack. It might
middle
be a compliment.
Average.
Just so we're clear.
But the but mid means, like, nothing special about
correct.
You, right? Like, you're mid, just... You're mid. Just... You're
you
there.
Exist.
You're there.
You're the basic B of the MLS.
Well, mid kind of means nobody hates you. Is there anyone out there that hates the Whitecaps?
Oh, I think mid is a very accurate representation.
I think mid, like...
Nobody cares about you if you're mid. You're just
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is it,
yeah, that's a problem, so that, too.
There we go. I'm just trying to suss it out.
What is special about the Whitecaps? They're not a particularly good team. In fact, they're bad, but they have the occasional, like, they won the Canadian Championship last year, which is a very mid accomplishment considering the teams that they beat. Their stadium, for the terms, for purposes of a summer soccer league, stinks. It absolutely stinks for their purposes. They don't spend a lot of money. They're not special that way. They are not going to attract a lot of great players because of their ambitions and the facility that they play in.
Ambition's a good word. Ambition's a good word because I feel like that's what a lot of these teams that have these soccer-specific stadiums have been and are. There's an ambition there to be something.
To be more than mid.
To be above mid?
Yes.
Mid plus?
Sure.
I don't know how the language works. But you get what I'm saying, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the ground, the home, the stadium, it's more than just where they play. It's unique to them. Like, it's the supporters' place. It's where they go and hang out pre-match. And it's just fans of St. Louis SC or Nashville SC or Austin FC. It's their thing.
Is it killing them, though? Is playing in BC Place hurting them as a franchise? Remember
worst ground in MLS.
Do you remember where we had that conversation about the Coyotes taking the easy way out and saying, fine, we'll go to Glendale?
Yep.
We should maybe, and this was years ago, right? We should maybe work on getting an arena built in Scottsdale or, you know, in the part of the valley where all our fans live. But we'll take the free stadium. We'll take the cheap rent or the easy deal or whatever it was in Glendale. And go there despite the risks of playing in the stadium. Well, here, you know, fast forward, what, a decade and a half, and we all know the situation that the Coyotes are in. This was my worry when they renovated BC Place, that it was going to be not good for the Lions, not good for the Whitecaps, and we would end up in this scenario that we are in right mm-hmm. now.
The only other one I think that's comparable where you've got a team playing in someone else's building that's it's too big and it doesn't fit and it feels like you're a tenant, not an owner, is like the Chicago Fire play at Soldier Field. And like what's Soldier Field is the Bears field.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Chicago Fire get to hang out there during the summers when the Bears aren't playing.
Yeah.
But it's not the same. I mean, the Soldier Field's historic and it's got a lot of like, I don't know, prestige to it.
I don't think we need to power rank all the teams. The fact and their stadiums.
Reason I brought up is because I said I think it's the worst, most ill-fitting combo and ground in the entire league.
Yeah, DC I agree. Plays.
Only one that might be close is Chicago.
We'll talk a little basketball on the other side with Mo Dakil of Bleacher Report and The Athletic. Just a massive game tonight in the NBA. We could see history if the Celtics come back from a 3-0 deficit against the Miami Heat. Win tonight in Game 7, they will become the first NBA team to do that, and they are significant favorites to do exactly that. You're listening to the Hoffer and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.